Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, everyone. My name is Scott Percival, and I'll be your moderator for tonight. Tonight we have a very special presentation from Cynthia Clark, and it's entitled Coping with the Job Loss. But before we start, I need to take care of some quick housekeeping. All this information that I'm about to tell you can be found on our homepage at pmlessonslearned.com. And while I'm there, some of you may have read through some of the threads that Yahoo's been having some problems. Well, I've had some problems uploading the presentations, Cynthia's presentation, but we always have a backup plan. If you would like to follow along with the presentation, if you go to pmlessonslearned.com, there is a Files and Presentation section there. Okay, that's pmlessonslearned.com. And if you click on the link, the blue link there, it'll take you to the presentation. You can start downloading it. So if you want to do that, and I'll start taking care of some a little bit more housekeeping here. First, I want to mention that we have three monthly calls. The first Thursday of the month is our PM study group, and it's a monthly conference call to help everyone who's studying for the PMP. The second Thursday of each month is our PM job shop call, and the third Thursday of each month we have our PM best practices call. Today is June 11th, and this is our 71st podcast, I'm pleased to announce. The interesting thing about the podcast is currently we have over 80,000 downloads of past calls, so there's a lot of good information there. Give me a second here. I'd like to encourage everyone to become an active participant tonight. Everyone on the call will benefit more from your participation, so please let's make it as lively as possible. I guess the next thing I'd like to say is that I've been involved with networking groups for about 5 years, and I would go to a meeting, and they would tell me things that I needed to do to get a job. And I remember learning these things, but I also remember walking away and saying, well, that certain things, that wasn't for me, and that's not what I wanted to do. And the truth is that I really wasn't ready to accept what they had to say. Several months ago,
I missed the first part of what you said about where files and presentations is.
Okay, we can back up. We had some technology issues with Yahoo. So if you visit pmlessonslearned.com, and on the left-hand side, you'll find the Files and Presentation section. And if you click there, right across the middle of the page, you'll see some red type with a blue link. If you click on the blue link, you'll come to a download page, and you can download the presentation right there.
Okay.
Yep, I was on. If anybody else has any questions, please, you want me to wait a second? Everybody good? Okay. Well, the next thing I started to say, well, several months ago, I spoke to a group, and I thought it went very well. And recently I ran into one of the participants, and she told me that, she listened to what I had to say, and she wrote things down, but she really didn't follow anything that I said. And she then told me that, truth be told, that she just wasn't ready to hear what I had to say. And now she was working on some of the things that I had offered her, and things seemed to be getting better. I got another little story about a networking friend that I meet for lunch on occasions. And we often speak of the job search. And at one point in time, he kind of acknowledged that he was mad at me for suggesting the things that he needed to do to find a job. He knew I was just trying to help him, but, it was just hard for him to really, accept what I was saying. He's been very quiet lately. And even though I still stay in touch, sometimes I have to wonder, is he ready to move on? And lastly, I want to talk about another friend of mine who was recently in transition, probably about a month or two. And she told me that she has sent over 100 resumes in, the last 4 to 6 weeks and only has gotten 3 replies, and those were thanks but no thanks. And once again, I suggested things for her to try, and I kind of got the yeah. And I don't think she's ready. With that being said, I'm always looking for energetic, creative speakers. I was out at a networking event in Wayne, New Jersey in January. ASTD, Alicia Linslow is the moderator up there, and that's where I saw Cynthia speak. And that's where Lisa wound up introducing me to her. So I think everybody's going to get a big benefit out of Cynthia's presentation tonight. And so now I would like to introduce Cynthia Clark and her presentation, Coping with Job Loss. And one more time before we get started, Cynthia, the technology problem that we're having with Yahoo, if anybody's listening on here, you can go to pmlessonslearned.com and the files and presentation section. Click on that. You'll find some red link. You'll find a red bar across the middle of the page. There's a blue link. Download the link, and you'll be able to find the presentation. If you want to speak, everybody right now is muted. If you want to speak, you're going to have to *6 to unmute yourself. So, Cynthia, please take it away.
Okay, thank you very much, Scott. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. As Scott had said, I do a significant amount of public speaking in the local New Jersey and New York area. And I'm sure, like many of you, I've heard many of the same topics: how to prepare your resume, how to prepare for interviews. And as a career coach, it occurred to me that frequently we completely jump over some of the initial steps to really preparing yourself to re-enter the job market. Before I begin with the actual presentation, I do want to start with a disclaimer that I am not a psychologist or a social worker or a psychiatrist. What I am is a survivor of loss. In about an 18-month period, I lost 8 members of my family, 5 of my immediate family members, and 6 of those people were lost in a 4-month period. So it was a tremendously challenging and difficult time for me, and as I tried to struggle and cope with my own grief, I noticed a lot of similarities between what I seemed to be going through and what my clients were going through. So both as a method of getting myself through this and helping my clients, I started to take a closer look at what was going on with me and what was going on with my clients. And I began by doing some research, which is really the second slide. And, you know, I just, before we get into this any further, if you have any questions, please feel free to jump in. If you have any comments, just please stop me. I'm more than happy to answer any questions as we go along. It tends to be a more fruitful discussion when we do that. So it's really not exclusively my giving a presentation and you're sitting back and listening. It really tends to work well when we work together. So what I did was to do some research, because that's the way I tend to do everything, is start with research. And I had known of a woman named Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She had done some seminal work on death and the process of death, and she called her book On Death and Dying. And she also wrote another book that was called similarly On Grief and Grieving. And according to Kubler-Ross, you go through 5 different stages, which I thought really mirrored what we go through when we lose a job. And they are, as the slide says, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and ultimately acceptance. And we're going to go tonight through each one of these to give you a sense of what each one of these stages means for you as you are trying to work your way through a job loss. And to begin with that, I would like to ask you a question. What is the number one question in the United States that people are customarily asked after they are asked their name when they meet someone for the first time. I ask you what your name is, and what do I usually ask right after that?
What do you do for a living?
What do you do for a living? In the American culture, your very essence, your identity, is intrinsically tied to how you collect a salary. It's intrinsically tied to what you do for a living. And I think it's really important that people recognize that, because it puts the idea of losing your job into proper relief. What we are really talking about is the loss of a portion of our identity. So it's a massive loss. And it's okay to feel that you've had a massive loss. I think what most of us tend to do is move directly into denial in order to be able to deal with it. And we lose a job one day, and the next day we're running out getting our resume done. When in fact, I think it's important to recognize that the first thing that tends to happen to many people after they've been informed that they're going to lose their job or they have been given the layoff speech is to go immediately into denial. And denial is really a coping mechanism. And it could be conscious, it could be subconscious, but you really don't want to accept what you're hearing. And I'm sure anyone who is in transition now remembers that conversation. It's shocking. You almost can feel your entire body tense up and then go into a trance. You're not sure that you're hearing what you know you're hearing. And that's really what the body is trying to do. The body is trying to help you. And so it puts you into denial as a way of coping with what is going on. Suddenly, you know, perhaps for the first or second time in your professional career, you have lost control of your identity. So denial is really a way of protecting yourself, creating a buffer between you and the job loss until, in fact, you are able to deal with it a little bit more positively and productively. So the next slide really is what denial looks for. You know, you get fired one day, your birthday is the next day, and one of your children gives you a tie, the last thing you need right now. Those kinds of things happen. When you are in denial, you just don't feel it as much. But think about, if you put yourself into denial, you also can't be a very productive job seeker because you're not functioning on all cylinders. So it's important to kind of recognize what's going on, recognize where you are, and be gentle with yourself. But in order to kind of recognize where you are, you have to have a sense of what denial looks like. Denial is about delay. And what it is a form of paralysis. When I was speaking with Scott, he mentioned something that I find with a lot of my clients, and he had said, you know, I just in the beginning didn't feel like I was in the right frame of mind to actually find a job. I never felt ready to actually push myself out the door or push myself to the next task. And that's what denial is. It's about mañana. It's about, you know, I can do this, a better job at this later on. The fact is that to some extent that is true, but you also cannot make denial a full-time way of life because it delays the kind of strategic, targeted, focused job search that you want to undertake. And that's largely because you can't focus when you're in denial. You feel kind of a sense of a fogginess in your brain. You cannot concentrate. You may tend to preoccupy yourself with odd jobs. Well, I'm going to look for a job as soon as I clean out the garage. I married very young in life at the ripe young age of 51, And my husband was a lifelong bachelor and brought all of his things from his former life and storage units into our garage. And 6 years later, I'm still waiting for him to clean out, to do that odd job. And the same thing tends to happen after you've lost a job. You make a list of to-dos, and you get really caught up in the fact that you're never finishing them. So that's really a trigger that you want to keep an eye out for. If you're constantly doing odd jobs that never get done, you're probably in denial. You may also become obsessed with the internet, with the BlackBerry, with emails, going, you know, checking every 5 minutes. Does somebody want me? They're going to write, they're going to call. This is all part of the denial process and the loss of the everyday work structure that you were used to. Also, you might delay updating your resume. I'm not ready now. And in fact, you're not. Delaying networking, I hate it, it's not going to help, I'm not ready. If your mind keeps telling you I'm not ready, probably you aren't. And that in turn, as I said, will lead to an inability to finish things. But the big thing that you want to keep an eye out for is you will either fail to change your spending patterns and habits, or you will spend more. And that's probably the biggest red flag that you want to keep an eye out for during the denial process. You're just refusing to believe that, A, the paycheck will not be coming in, and, B, any severance that you may have been awarded is going to be self-limited. So that's one thing that you do in order to start to push yourself through the denial stage, is really to start to recognize that your status quo has changed. Are there any questions so far? Okay, so why don't we move on to what you do. If you're in denial and you want to move your way through it, what can you do? I tend to have a bias for action, so any of my solutions really involve acting. And you always want to ask yourself, how is what I am doing or not doing helping me to find a job? So the first thing you want to do is create a schedule. I'm a firm believer in Outlook. I believe that you should use appointments with yourself for certain periods of time to do certain things during the day. But first and foremost, after you lose a position, is to file for unemployment, complete the COBRA paperwork, review your family finances or have someone review them for you, and update your resume. Definitely, I'm a firm believer in conservative financial planning during a period like this. And one of the signs of denial, as I said, is kind of a high level of anxiety whenever you think about your finances and kind of delaying looking at that. Look at it, face down the beast, and then make a plan for dealing with the funds that you do have available to you. You also want to create a worst-case coping strategy. What will you do if the severance runs out, if the unemployment runs out? What would your plan be? I do think that we are going into a more positive period. I tend to monitor the job boards on a regular basis, and it is, as I had predicted, that in June, contract jobs are starting to open up. They're rare. There are not a lot of them, but they are there, and they were not there in February, March, and April. So when you think about your plan B, think about actively seeking out contract work and agencies that work with contractors. Sign up with them now and use them as a part of your planning because I do believe this is, I'm sorry to admit that I remember a very similar economy in the early 1970s, and this is exactly what happened. Back in those days, we called them consultants, but what we did was we cut so deeply, and it was in December of the year before. By June, we had so overworked our people that the productivity slipped tremendously, and we had to bring additional temporary employees in, and that is happening now. So that's the good news. There is an option for you, but plan for that. Take the steps to be one of the people who is considered first by these contract agencies when those positions start to open up. And also, I believe you should discuss the realities with your family. It kind of pushes you through denial. It forces you to deal with the realities of a job loss, and it helps your family to understand you a little bit better and to understand the economic realities that are new for them as well. The better informed everyone else is, you included, the less stress you're under. I was coaching a client a few weeks ago, and much to my surprise, she just said at one point, "I can't stand the stress one more minute," and she started to cry. And this is a woman who has been really top-notch. She lost her job. She's handled it beautifully. Again, a sign of denial. But I sensed that something was going wrong, so I probed, and she started to cry. And I said, "You know, you're under a tremendous stress, and it's only normal." And I had a feeling, so I asked the question, and I said, "How much of this fear have you shared with your husband?" She is the primary wage earner. And she's the shock in her voice, she said to me, "Oh, gosh, I haven't told him anything about how I feel. I don't want to make things worse." And a lot of people do that. We try to be strong. That's what we're taught in business. That's how we've been successful. It's okay to rely on each other. And the more, as I said, everyone in the family understands the new economic reality, the easier it is to live according to it. Okay. Are there any questions?
Yeah, I have a question, Cynthia. This is Scott. You know, I gotta say that point really rang true for me. For a couple of reasons, you know, I participated in networking groups because I thought that, you know, they were in the same boat and that they understood what I was going through. And my wife would just kind of like look at me, you know, and say, "Well, you know," almost like, "Well, why can't you find a job?"
Yep.
You know, and I guess by opening up, I mean, I guess it would have made things easier. Maybe she would have been somewhat more understanding. But you tend to, you know, they tend to look, you think they're looking down on you. And, you know, we talk about sharing with our spouses. Even our friends, you know, they're, you know, your true friends are obviously concerned about you. And, you know, I remember a lot of conversations with, you know, "Scott, how's the job search going?" And I would say, "It's okay." And they would say, "Okay." And they would just move on. And it was like almost like they did their obligation. They had their obligation to ask about it, but it was an uncomfortable thing for them. So you need to share with those people also. So I think that point is very, very well taken.
I mean, absolutely. Just using myself and my own losses as an example, as I said, I lost, you know, everyone in my immediate family in a very short period of time. I do have an extended family, but from the time of the funeral of the last person, I did not hear from anyone in my extended Irish family for 1 month because they couldn't cope with it. They didn't. It's an awkward situation when someone loses a person or a job. What do you say?
Right.
But that makes you feel more isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to address the issue of networking and the internet. When your family doesn't know what you are doing, they are going to fill that vacuum with wild thoughts. You say you're going out networking. That frequently gets translated, because I'm working with a social worker right now who's trying to put together a support group for spouses of the unemployed. The spouses or the significant others think you guys are going out drinking. That's what they think. they don't get the concept of networking. So if you can kind of explain to them, and if you can also share, let's face it, a lot of us don't like networking. If you don't like it, and it's really hard for you to get out the door, share that. It helps people understand you more, and it makes it much more palpable to them. Similarly, with the internet, if you're on the internet all day, people don't believe you are actively engaged in a job search. Tell your significant other some of the job boards that you're frequenting. Tell them a little bit about a job that you see. Tell them a little bit about your frustrations about, you know, sending resumes into an empty hole. This is your new job. Give them a sense of what that new job is like so that they don't fill the vacuum of a lack of information with incorrect information. Okay, so now we're going to move on to my next denial remedies. What do you do to get out of this kind of fog that you're in? I think you have, as I said, I have a bias for action. I think you have to do something physical to make it, to make your brain register that it's time to move on. I believe you should take your business clothes to the cleaners. If you can store them, you know, keep a couple of suits out for interviews. Otherwise, store the rest with the cleaners. If you've been using business casual, just put them in a box. Again, save just a couple, put them away. One thing that people never do until they get another job is clean out their briefcase. Clean out the briefcase of all the junk that's been growing in there for months and months, maybe years, and store it. Put the briefcase away, because a briefcase in an office or a den can, for many people, be a constant reminder of what they perceive to be a failure. You don't need that in your life. You don't need the briefcase right now. Put it away until you need it. It's important to kind of go through the papers that were a part of your previous life. We collect so much junk, and it might be in folders in your Outlook. It might be hard copies. Go through everything from your old employer. Pick out the things that you believe you will be able to use again or that you can build upon in a future role, and get rid of everything else. Get rid of the announcements. Get rid of the routine papers that for some reason you just never got to throw out. It's important to go through that discarding ritual. Okay. I also think it's important to design a personal ritual for moving on. When we lose people, most of us go through a ritual. I'm Irish. We live by rituals. The wake is a really big deal to us. So is the funeral. But it's also a ritual, a process that helps us accept the inevitability of going on without a person in your life. You don't have this job in your life. You don't have a lot of the associations with other people from that company that you had previously had that had tended to define your routine. So I think it's important to go through a ritual to kind of mark the end of that chapter of your life. And that means maybe reviewing some job evaluations, looking at some awards that you have gotten, some certifications that you may have earned, some certificates of accomplishment. Recognize that all that you achieved in this position, and that that is now part of your past. And as I said, discard what you will not be using again. Perhaps keep a memory box of some things that you're not ready to get rid of. And again, put that down in the basement. And lastly, I think the best way to get out of denial is to spend some time with your family. It really is a golden opportunity, this time off, that you may never spend, may never have the opportunity to spend again. So it's important to kind of carve out some time during this job search to kind of recognize how lucky you are to be able to spend this unstructured time with your family, and to make a point of spending time with your family members. I can promise you that if you have children, they will not remember this as the time that mom or dad lost their job. They will remember it as the time you were able to get to the games, the time it didn't matter when you ate dinner, the summer that was the most relaxed, right? The time that they got to know you the best. So I think that, you know, I try not to put too positive a spin on things, but I think that a job loss is a good thing in that it helps us reorder our life priorities. And one of them, which helps you get through the denial process, as I said, is really cherishing the people around you. It really is a golden opportunity. Are there any questions I can answer? Then we are going to move on to my very next and favorite phase, which is anger. I love anger because anger helps you get everything out. And if it is channeled, if it is used properly, it can really help galvanize you and motivate you to take the kinds of steps that you need to take to get your life back on track and where you need it to be. But, you know, anger is what it is, and it's a frequently negative, often irrational emotion, and it tends to be directed both inwardly and outwardly. You direct it at the situation, at other people, at yourself. Feeling like a victim is a form of anger. You might even have a burning desire to kind of lash out and get even, and there's going to come a time when there's payback. And I actually noticed this in a networking event a few weeks ago. A man was very frustrated with what I call the black hole of resume submissions and never hearing back after interviews. And he said, you know, these people, these employers, better remember that we have good memories and we will not forget. While all of that is true, it's also an indication of anger. So it, as I said, can be used very positively, but you also kind of want to be mindful of what it is and what you're experiencing. And for those of us who are following around on the slides, this is what anger looks like. You're holding your head, screaming. You can't take it anymore. So what does it look like in terms of your personal experience when you're looking for a job? It's really about asking yourself the question, why me? Why did this have to happen to me? I had a brother who was diagnosed with end-stage kidney disease at the age of 29. And there was, as I said, we're Irish, there was all this moaning and groaning. And he was in the hospital one night, and he said to me, you know, everyone is asking me, don't I ask myself the question, why me? And he said, he shrugged his shoulders, and he said to me, I just keep asking, why not me? And I've kind of carried that as a good question the rest of my life. Why not me? Why can't I be the person who can handle this well? Let me find a way to be able to cope with this in a way that perhaps someone else might not have been able to. So that would be the goal. But in the meantime, you kind of have to work through these incredibly difficult emotions of, you know, anger/fear. And what you tend to do when you have first been let go is to question and second-guess yourself, your judgment, your skills, your capabilities. You know, if I was so good at the job for so long, what was so wrong with me that I got fired? What was I doing wrong? Have I lost my skills? Have I lost my edge? Am I too old? I am here to tell you this has nothing to do with you. Most people in this economy who have lost their jobs are nothing more than collateral damage. What organizations have chosen to do, rashly in my opinion, is to use job cuts as a way of improving revenue quickly. So the more you can realize that you are nothing more than an ability to artificially bulk up profitability, the easier it is to work through the anger, because it had nothing to do with you, and you shouldn't be second-guessing yourself, your skill sets, your ability to do the job. This is an historically bad economy, and people, particularly business leaders, in my mind, have made historically bad decisions. So keep that in mind. Look outward rather than inward for the reasons for the job loss, and try as much as possible to develop some objectivity about what you've gone through. That also, but anger may also mean burning bridges, bad mouthing either people you worked with or your employer. I will suggest, as a former recruiter, that it's critical when people ask you about your last job to not begin your response with the word "well." Right? Well, what happened is, you want to make sure you strike that from your interview vocabulary, because that to us is a red flag. It's a red flag that you're very negative. So you want to find a way to just say very matter-of-factly, very quickly, the position was eliminated, and as a result, I have an opportunity to look for other positions, and that's why I'm here today. Okay. Short and sweet, and move on. The minute you say "well," we think, uh-oh, there's a story here, and we are going to probe until we get it. Okay. You may also experience great disappointment because you had unrealistic expectations. Let's face it, we're all ambitious. We're all thinking about our career goals and how to accomplish them. And so in one day, we go from thinking about what our next rung in our career ladder with this organization might be to being out of work. And that, I think, just naturally creates a certain anger. Suddenly the rug's been pulled out from under you, and your expectations are dashed. So I think just recognizing that helps you work through the anger that, as I said, I think you're naturally experiencing. But that anger, as I said, it can be directed inward. It can be directed outward. Frequently, it shows itself in irritation with family and with friends. You tend to have a very low tolerance, a very low patience level, because you're thinking, this is a stupid issue. I don't have a job. I'm running out of money. And logically, all of that makes sense, but they can't read your mind. They just know that 6 months ago, you were an easygoing person who listened to everything, and now you get irritated by everything. So again, sharing as much as you can and kind of keeping a perspective really helps you work through the anger. Perseverating is the only psychological term that I will use this evening, and it is because I love the word. I love the way it sounds. But what this is the mental tape that we tend to run in our heads over and over and over again. And this is the should. If only I had done this. I should have done this. I should have said that. And what if I had done that? As soon as you start to do this perseverating, you want to try to consciously make yourself stop, because what you're really doing is feeding or giving fuel to the anger by fantasizing about what you might have done. And the fact of the matter is, you did the right thing. You left with dignity. When you're out a while and you're frustrated, you feel like you could have handled it better if you had stood up for yourself and just said what you thought. But the reality is, I would guess 90 to 95% of you handled it exactly the way you should have, because you preserved your reference. But it doesn't change the fact that you still when you are out of a job, feel very powerless. You feel like you have no control over the situation. You feel like you have no control over the next chapter of your life. And it is true, some wise person once said, the man who is angry is the man who is without power. And in some sense, we have lost power over how to control our daily routine, power over knowing what is going to happen next in terms of the routine of our job, power over being able to methodically plan our next career step. So what do we do about the fact that we don't have some elements of the power that we once had? There are some remedies that you can take to, as I said, use anger in a positive way. I am, as I said, a firm believer in really channeling anger to get what you want. And the first thing you can do when you get angry is to use it to energize your job search. Call the person that you are angry hasn't called you back. Apply for that job that you're debating, am I qualified? Do I have all the skills they listed? Call another person to network with them. If you are nervous or uncomfortable about calling up for an informational interview, call them when you get angry. Use that anger to fuel a step in your job search that you have been hesitant to take until now. Okay. I'm also a firm believer in physical activity. You want to really, when you're angry, do something that is very physical. Play basketball. I take kickboxing. Kickboxing is a great way to really exhaust yourself, to get everything out. And really, when you do something that requires a lot of energy, it does release endorphins, and you walk out of there much more contented and feeling a general feeling of positivity about your situation and your ability to make things better. I also believe that you should objectify as much as possible, as I've been saying. You know, a lot of your job losses are due, as I said, to the overall economy, which is historic in its impact, and, as I said, the bad decisions of others. So the more you can look at the entire situation that our country has gone through, the easier it is for you to say, you know, I am one of millions. When we are losing $500,000 jobs, half a million jobs a month, it wasn't about you. When we can have organizations that were part of our own personal history, like GM and Chrysler, declare bankruptcy, it's not about you. So the more you can think of those telltale economic signs that this is much bigger than you are, the easier it is for you to allow your anger over it to subside. Also, I think it's important to detach yourself from your career. If you can think of your career and your job as a product that you offer to employees, it's easier to not become angry when they don't choose you. Certainly, a salesperson would not get angry if, I'm going to use a female analogy now, if I asked for a red dress and they only had a green dress, I need red. She doesn't have it. She's not going to get angry with me or feel rejected. She's just going to say, you know what? I have to start to stock some red dresses. And the more you can think about yourself and your skills and your career as a product that perhaps does not exactly fit the needs of a particular employer, the more you will be able to find the right employer for you who does need the product that you provide. I think it's also important when you're angry to kind of become selfish. Forgiveness is a gift that you give to yourself. The ability to forgive yourself for being caught in this maelstrom of an economy, for being the one who wound up with the short stick and lost their job, the quicker it is for you to recover and begin a more productive job search. And there are some questions that I have given you that might help you with that. Who or what am I angry at? You really want to focus your anger. And then the follow-up question to that is the company worth it? Is it worth your anger? Typically, the answer is no. What is my anger doing to me? Are you going to wind up with more medical costs because you've allowed your anger to take control over you, raise your blood pressure, maybe affect your health? What is my anger doing to my family? And lastly, and this to me is the pivotal question, how will your anger help you find a new job? I always said as a recruiter that negativity is like garlic. It comes out through the candidate's pores. I know it as soon as I walk in the room. So if it's only going to work against you, maybe this is a good time to let it go. And you do the letting go by really finding new and different activities and perhaps even a new way to satisfy your own career needs. But one way or another, as you kind of work through this anger, you do move on to the next stage, which is bargaining. And bargaining, when you lose a person, is, according to Kubler-Ross, was about bargaining with a higher authority, a supreme being. In the job loss situation, I have found that it's really bargaining on two different levels, bargaining about your past job and bargaining about future opportunities. And it's about the if-onlys, the shoulds, what can I do, what can I change. But what bargaining really is about regret. And you're still trying to make deals about the situation, about the job loss, about the termination with yourself, with others, and with the situation itself. So bargaining looks like some of the things that I am going to describe now. And the number one is people try to get their old job back. They think that if they just wait long enough, the company's going to call them back. They are not going to call you back. They've made that decision. And it's important for you to realize that they are not going to call you back. So if any of you are in outplacement with a firm that is paid for by your employer, frequently you will fall into the trap because you will be with other people who have been laid off, and this situation tends to frequently come about. You will go to the outplacement firm, and people from your old company will say, oh, I heard about this job. I heard about that job. You need to disengage from those kinds of conversations because they will not consider you. And again, poor decisions because they are choosing to get someone perhaps cheaper who doesn't have your historical knowledge. So that's one element of bargaining that you want to be careful that you don't fall into. Another is, this is when you're dealing with yourself, if I had just done this project better, if I had just handled this response better, if only, that you have to really stop yourself from saying. Some of it is about being belligerent. You know, then I should have said, when they said they were going to fire me, then I should have said, and I could have come back at them, and I could have pulled out all the skeletons in the closet. I will say again, you did what you were meant to do. You preserved your references, you left with dignity, and you left people with a good impression of you so that they will think of you for other positions, either that their networking people may know about, or if they move on to another company. So always remember when you are kind of replaying these coulda, woulda, shoulda, remember to pat yourself on the back. I preserved my future. The other thing you want to be careful about is fantasizing and magical thinking. For some reason, we changed the job that we lost into this wonderful, idealized job. The people were great to work with. The company was the best company I've ever worked with. Everything was great. It's really important that you not allow yourself to think that way. I had a client who went on for 2 sessions, and he's paying me to tell me about this wonderful company that he worked for. He will never be able to replicate that job again. And so because of that, as you can see, he went through 2 sessions. He could not start a new job search. And so I probed him. What I did was conduct an interview, and I found some areas that didn't sound so great to me, and I asked him about them. And sure enough, once he started to focus on elements of the job that were not so great, he was able to get past this bargaining phase and move on to a much more productive job search. Because, as the last bullet point says, he was no longer trying to find a job that would allow him to recreate this fantasized, magical idea of what his old job had been. Are there any questions on that? You guys are all so quiet. I'm not used to this. So what do you do if you're stuck bargaining and you're really thinking a lot about what you could have done, plus thinking about in the future, well, if I can just get that job back, I can take less money. If I can just talk to this guy, he'll understand my situation and he'll bring me back in a different department. If I can only get the job back, if only. How do you get past that? I'm going to suggest that you make a list of the things that you hated most about your job and memorize it. It really shifts your focus to the things that weren't so great about the job, and it really pierces that magical thinking. I think it's also... Yes, go ahead.
I have a question. This is Scott.
Mm-hmm.
My first job I was at for 24 years, one that I thought that, I was going to retire from, maybe even own the company.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me once that it takes about 1 year for every 5 years of employment to get over it. Have you heard any kind of similar theories or time frames?
No, I haven't. What I have seen in my practice is... the more that you focus your thinking on your past job and the more that you compare your past job to your new job, then yes, I would say that ratio is probably accurate. But the more you can immerse yourself in your new job and refuse to allow your brain to compare it to the old job, the more quickly you are going to recover from your job loss.
Mm-hmm.
This is like dating. People laugh at me, but as I said, I married at 51. I was an expert on dating. The more you compare the next person you date to the last person you date, the less he is going to measure up. Because you can't possibly compete with a fantasy. So the more you think about this job, and we tend to idealize it, as I said, I think, Scott, in when you saw this presentation, I never made it back from the cemetery. I never got out of the limousine that one or another of my relatives had not been sainted by the time I got home. They never did anything wrong. As soon as they were dead, they became saints. They were, you never argued with them. It was such a tremendous loss. At my brother's memorial service, the priest said, "This is a man who never cursed," and he paused. And then he said, "The darkness." And I thought, well, that's just My brother was an epic cursor. He taught me more words than I thought I would ever learn. And here's this man saying, he never cursed the darkness. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? And we do exactly the same thing with our prior jobs. We forget all the bad stuff. We forget about the managers and their unreasonable expectations. And then when we go into a new job, all we run this tape that says, this isn't the way we did it at my other company. As soon as you start to hear that mental tape, you have to stop it. And the more you stop it, the quicker you will acclimate yourself to the new job and start to like that more. But it does take time. And the longer you are in that company, the harder it is and the longer it takes. But 24 years would mean like about 5 years for you to get over it. Has that been your experience?
Yes.
Wow.
Truthfully. Obviously it's you know, the first year is the hardest, and you know, you go through all the grief and the depression and the anger, and it seems to kind of, it's not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's, to me anyway, it was like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 1, 2, 2, 3, you know.
Yeah.
It seemed to kind of cycle back and forth a little bit, you know, so, but, you know, and then there was another position that I was at for 2 years, and I'm still, you know, a little, I still don't understand it myself.
Right.
But that's less as of an impact as the place that I, again, 24 years, I thought I was going to buy the company, I thought I was going to retire from the company, I thought I was going to own the company, you know, it was much harder. And to this day, I still, you know, have minor, you know, setbacks where I, you know, I kind of think like, what happened? What did I do wrong? What, you know, what could I have changed, you know, so.
Yeah, that I would, you know, as I said, you know, you try and stop those thoughts and say, okay, I'm not going to go there. But I will say that I think the first company that you start with, like your first love, is the one that you never really forget. And the more you have built career aspirations into that company and the longer you have stayed, the harder it is to make the adjustment.
Right. And I think, you know, the 24 years was certainly significant. I mean, you know, I've had other things that were, you know, a year or, you know, 2 years.
I mean, it's a lifetime, you know?
24 years, I mean, it's definitely a family type of thing, you know, so.
Absolutely, and don't discount that. And also, to Scott's point, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says, for personal loss, you have to go through each one of these stages. It's my experience with my clients that you go back and forth. Sometimes the anger is gone, and then something will happen, and it triggers it again.
Yep.
It is my belief that it's because the difference between personal loss and job loss is that we get tastes of job losses over and over and over again when we get rejected for the next job or when we don't hear back on our resumes. So it's a much more challenging task to kind of work your way through this whole process, and you get pushed back into different stages based on what you are experiencing in your job search. So just to kind of finish up this slide, you know, I think it's important, since most of our work life is spent with other people, make a list of the people that you really didn't like and why you didn't like them. Keep a mental image of your worst day top of mind, so that you say, you know, it wasn't that great. It was not the greatest job. I had real challenges there.
Mm-hmm.
That helps you in a job search because it also helps crystallize the things that you really want to do differently. In terms of kind of, you know, putting the memory in its proper place, this is what I mean about stopping the memory. Set a time limit for how long you are going to allow yourself to think about the old job. And that may mean that you have to go out, leave the room where you were thinking about it, maybe go for a walk around the block, do something to break up that thought process and to kind of fill your mind. You know, this is a beautiful time of year with spring and summer coming and birds all over the place. If you can get outside for a few minutes, it usually breaks up that loop. Okay.
But that's another instance where you actually have to say, you know, to your spouse, if they work from home, you know, listen, I'm just going to go for a walk. I need to get away for a while, so that they understand where you just don't think you're out there sunning yourself, you know?
Absolutely. And you know what? It's okay to say, you know what? I am really getting caught up in my old job, and I have to break this up. They don't want you in that bad place any more than you want to be there. And they're much more likely to say, yeah, go for a walk, because they know that ultimately, sadly, we're going to wind up taking it out on the ones we love the most. So the more you can say, you know what, I'm just obsessing over this job that I lost. I'm going to go for a walk and try and get a change of scenery. They're much more likely to be supportive. The other way of doing it, if you don't have the luxury of that, is to develop a mental method of stopping the thoughts. And the next slide is what I do. I use a mental stop sign. So when I start to obsess about something that either didn't work or something that I'm troubled about, I think to myself, the traffic sign, the stop, and that's enough to break things up in my head. So any trick that you can come up with, if there's some music that makes you, a particular song that makes you think differently. I love Beyonce's To the Left, you know, she just throws this guy out and, you know, throw the thoughts out, play the song, and move on to the real work of finding a job. Mm. And then you may wind up...
I use songs to motivate me just before an interview.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Is there a particular song you use?
It usually has, you know, a pounding beat, you know.
Cool.
You know, so it just kind of really gets my energy up, and, you know, that's what I do, you know. So I think, you know, music is definitely a benefit.
Yeah, I think it's a great motivator. But regardless of what tool you're trying to use to motivate yourself, you may wind up in the fourth stage, which is honestly the most crummy stage, because this is where you really do feel powerless. And it's because the emotion becomes so overwhelming, and you just feel dejected, disjointed. You just can't seem to put one foot in front of the other. Sometimes we're not even aware of it. We say we're low energy. We say we're just not motivated. And sometimes that's really masked depression. And it could kind of look like the following. You just don't feel like yourself. You know you're not yourself. This is the kind of Linus with the black cloud following him all around. That's my idea of depression. You're very sluggish. Everything seems to take forever, or you just can't seem to get motivated to start. Everything seems like a huge job. Again, it's similar to denial, because you just can't focus enough to finish anything. And that's when you start to get down on yourself. Oh, if I can't even clean out this garage, how am I going to find a new job? How am I going to do well on an interview? And that, in turn, paralyzes you from doing the nitty-gritty hard work of looking for a job, getting out there, networking, contacting people, going beyond just the resume submissions. And then sometimes it kind of turns into this terrible, almost unspeakable fear that you are never going to work again, which can in turn turn into despair. I am here to tell you, you are going to work again. It may not be any kind of a job that you think that you're going to have right now. It may be something very different, but you are going to work again, and you are going to work again because the numbers are in your favor. We have a zero population growth in this country. We have clamped down on immigration. We have raised the bar for a lot of jobs. Employers right now get to be very discriminating in their selection because so many people are out of work, but they can't produce the goods with the skeletal employment force that they are operating with now. Eventually, the jobs will be there, and you are going to have one of them. So whenever you say, I'm never going to work again, try to tell yourself this is a completely nonsensical thought. The numbers dictate that I am. It may not be on the timetable that I want it to be on, but it is going to happen. So please don't get too down on yourselves. The numbers are in your favor. Some baby boomers are going to just say, you know what, I'm done. I have enough money. It's not as much as I had, but I still can retire and retire comfortably. It's not worth getting back into the workforce. It's not worth going through this grueling job search process. I'm retiring now. That is going to create openings when some of these, this lack of job openings that exists right now, when that starts to ease up, there are people that are not going to go back into the workforce. And that is going to create a job short, an employee shortage. I guarantee it. It happened in the 70s. It will, when we had a much bigger population, it will happen again. Okay. But in the meantime, how do you get through this? You've got to push yourself out the door. Isolation is your enemy. And so if your significant other is not at home and you are at home all day, that is a recipe for disaster. Get yourself out the door. Make sure you attend one meeting, one networking situation, one educational opportunity, something where there are is a group of people once a week. As I said, I'm a big fan of exercise. Adopt a regular exercise routine, preferably a class where there are other people, so you have the social component as well. I take a class at the Y, and my trainer, the instructor, mentioned that her husband had lost his job, and it was amazing. There was this groundswell. There were about 15 people in the room, and I think 8 of them had spouses or significant others who had lost their jobs. So it helps you realize you're not alone. And there is a community out there that can support you and that can help you find a new job. I do think since we do come from work environments that are structured, it's important to have a structure to your day, even when you are not working. However, unlike a lot of career coaches and experts on this, I do not believe you should be spending 8 hours a day on a job search because it's not productive. 4 to 6 targeted hours a day on a job search is more than enough.
I think it's important to point a few things out there, though, Cynthia.
Mm-hmm.
4 to 6 hours on the internet looking at job boards is probably not the best way to use your time.
Absolutely not. What you want to do in those 4 to 6 hours, if you find a job on a job board, my rule for my clients is you never apply to a job less than twice. You have to apply through the web because increasingly that's how government-mandated compliance numbers are being collected. But you should be taking the information from that job posting, doing research on the company, going on to LinkedIn, going to Zoom Info, finding the name of someone that you can send that resume to and that you can also contact and ask for an informational interview. That's a targeted job search.
I think the statistics actually show probably about 7% of all jobs are found on the internet.
Yes, it's a very small number.
Yeah, but in my mind, it might even be less than that. In my mind, if 7% are found on the internet, then maybe you should only be spending 7% of your time on the internet as far as job boards. Researching, that's a different story. But
that's a good
actually
point.
Actually posting the job boards. Conversely, they say, you know, somewhere around 70% are found through networking.
Right.
So once you find those jobs, you got to figure out how to network into them, and that's how I, you know, found my last job. I found it on the job board, and I networked into it. I applied twice, and I was, you know, persistent with follow-up. So all your points are very relevant and valid.
Has anyone had similar experiences or contrasting experiences? Okay. I also think it's important to take time to play. You know, if you think of your brain as a car, you know, it runs on fuel and it gets energized, and certainly the creative aspects of it need to be fed, and the only way you can do that is through different experiences, and you're not going to have those different experiences in front of an internet, in front of your computer. You really have to get outside, take some time to play. It gives you a whole different outlook on your job search, and that's really when different and more creative ways of looking for a job come into your mind. I'm sure you've heard, you know, everybody says, oh, I had this idea in the shower. Well, that's because they were asleep beforehand, usually, and so they had that break. You can get that same break and an even more creative break if you take some time to play. Celebrate any successes. Now, see, people say, you said something about someone had sent 100 resumes and only got 3 responses. That's a 3% response rate. In direct marketing, they expect a 2% response rate, which they don't they don't even distinguish between a yes or a no. So the industry standard for direct response marketing is a 2% response rate. So that person beat the odds. You didn't get the answer that you wanted, but there's something about your resume that's catching, and you beat a direct marketing industry standard. So maybe you want to fine-tune your resume so that you get the response you want, but it tells you you're on the right track, and you should be celebrating that success.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm sorry, I think
You know, one of the things I do to celebrate, you know, when I get a little depressed is I've gotten the habit of all the positive emails that I've gotten, I kind of send them to my home email. So if they, you know, if I get a, you know, you did a good job on this, or, you know, thank you for stepping up, or, you know, I kind of serve that as just inspiration to kind of move forward and say, you know what, somebody appreciated what I was doing.
I think that's a great idea. In my practice, I tend to try to help my clients celebrate their success. And so I do send out, you know, a lot of congratulatory emails, and they also print them out and put them in their offices to read. So anytime anybody compliments you on anything, use that as a way to kind of reinforce your own talents. And, you know, you can engage in positive reinforcement of yourself.
Your own self-worth.
Right. Because if you don't value you, why should a potential employer? And if none of this works, you know, you might want to consider some professional support. It's not the end of the world. You can go to a social worker. It's, you know, many work on a sliding scale. And frequently it's just short term, just to get you over the hump and get you back to where you need to be, which ultimately is acceptance. And that's really about keeping the loss in perspective, realizing, you know what, it is a job. It is not my identity. It does not define all aspects of who I am. Recognizing, as I've been saying all along, some of the good aspects of being unemployed, the ability to spend more time with your family, the ability to perhaps reinvent yourself, to learn a new routine, to meet new people. I'm sure Scott never thought he would be this actively involved in job search. But it's a different way of expressing yourself.
No. Yeah, absolutely. And truthfully, one of the reasons why I do this is because, you know, I want to give back. After 24 years, I found a job after, I don't know, I was out probably a year, I found a job. I thought I was going to retire from that job. I thought I'd be there for a very long time. You know, I thought I was, you know, I had the right credentials. I thought I was a smart guy, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was let go again. So, you know, I was bound to determine that, this time it wasn't going to happen to me, so I was going to continue to network, and I was going to try to market myself. This call is very, very quiet.
It is.
Yep. And, I would think if anybody's on the call, how many people have you have heard of Cynthia Clark? Well, if you're on the call, you have. How many people have you heard of Scott Percival? Well, if you're on the call, you have. But anybody else that hasn't spoken tonight, what are you doing to, ask the right questions, to get involved, to volunteer, to step up? Those are the things that are going to help you move forward, to get through the depression, get through the anxiety, have the determination that, you're going to succeed at this. That's just a suggestion that I have. I had no idea that I wanted to do this. In fact, I wanted to stay in the background. When Henry asked me, he was looking for volunteers, and I said, I'll stay in the background. I don't want to do this. And little by little, over the last 2 years, I've been involved, and I've been the moderator of this call for over a year now.
Wow.
So I encourage you all to volunteer. And if it's not, in a networking group, I encourage you to volunteer. There's websites. There's niche websites that you can volunteer at hospitals and other things. And all that's going to do is going to get you out of the house, going to keep your skills fresh. It's a plus all around, so I encourage you to do that.
And for those of you who are not comfortable networking, volunteer work is a great thing because you're meeting different people and you never know. Many people don't want to admit that they're unemployed. I think you should tell everyone because you don't know who they know. And when you are in a different setting, you're doing volunteer work, you're feeling good about yourself, people say, wow, this is a great person. I think I want to help them out. And I think, the more you start to find different ways of coping with your free time, the more you do develop a more peaceful attitude. You are not as anxious about the job search because it isn't your exclusive focus. You tend to get more philosophical about it. It is what it is. I am going to find a job. And it doesn't matter about what could have been. It matters about the next chapter. So you start to create a forward focus as opposed to a past focus. And really that's when true acceptance starts to come into play. And true acceptance is really about letting go of the past. This was a chapter in my life that I appreciated, that I cherished, and now it's time to move on to another chapter of your life. If we stayed in high school forever, think of what we would have missed. And yet, when we first leave high school, there's a combination of relief and panic and self-doubt. And yet, we all get through it. And you will get through this also. But it does mean letting go of, as we've been talking, the job, some personal associations that you may have had there, some expectations of yourself, of what you thought you were going to be, of perhaps how others were going to help you and have not risen to the occasion, abandoning the shoulds. Everyone has their own way of conducting a job search. If it works for you, it's the right way. And I think accepting that maybe the formal networking isn't the best way for you, but maybe networking, maybe volunteering is a better way. Maybe going to some of these classes is a better way for you to network. Whatever works for you is the right way for you, and that's what true acceptance is. And I think over the long term, separating your identity from your job forevermore is the most important thing that you can do. And instead of saying, and this, as Americans, we tend to say, I am, even I said it, I am a career coach, as opposed to saying, I work as a career coach, I think is very important. Because if you lose your job in the future, you won't suffer this tremendous emotional blow. It's not everything that you are. It is just one component of the different facets of your personality. And that, I think, in turn will help you find a renewed sense of purpose because you appreciate what you have and you appreciate every day, the good in it and the bad in it as well. So I would leave you with one last thought. And that really is a definition of courage that that I keep hanging on my wall. And it says, more powerful than the will to win is the courage to begin. And so I ask you to really pat yourselves on the back every morning that you get up and you begin again, because that to me is the true definition of courage. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have or to leave you to the rest of your business. So, Scott, I'll hand it off to you.
Well, I think, you know, you should probably tell a little bit about your, you know, all of PM Lessons Learned and PM Job Shop. We're all volunteers. Cynthia has volunteered her time. Maybe you want to share a little bit about yourself as far as your CareerQuest coaching services, or not that we're trying to make a sales pitch here, but, you know, if somebody's interested and appreciated what you had to offer this evening, I, you know, that's only fair. That's only something I can do to kind of repay the favor to a certain extent.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I provide career and executive coaching to individuals. I would say that the choice of a career coach is something that you should decide upon with care. It has to be a good personality fit. I tend to have a very pragmatic approach, which I think is probably obvious this evening. I help with resume preparation, interview preparation. I also do what I call interview autopsies, so you can kind of go through what happened, where you think you went wrong, where we can improve upon it in the future, and, you know, give you some insights on what recruiters look for, because as a former recruiter, I do kind of have an inside view of what the objective of the recruiter is and what kinds of responses they are typically looking for. So, you know, my service is very personalized, very customized to the individual, and, you know, if anyone is interested, I would be more than happy to have you take a look at my website. It's CynthiaClarkConsulting.com, or, you know, you can reach out to me personally.
Cynthia? Okay,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
This is Linda.
Hi.
I was...
Hi, Linda.
Thank you for your time. I was interested to hear all the discussion. Do I remember you saying that there were five phases? We only got to denial and anger tonight, right?
No, we covered bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
Oh, all right. I just missed the transitions then.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But what I will say, Linda, we do edit these phone calls.
Hi. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. We do edit these phone calls. So, you know, if you missed a part, you know, probably in about 2 to 3 weeks, this phone call has been recorded and will be available on the PM Lessons Learned website. And for that matter, I mean, you know, all 70 other podcasts are also available. So, you know, there's several Job Shop calls and PMP study group calls. So I encourage you to go there, you know. And just real quick, you know, hiring a career coach is a very personal thing. You have to have a personal fit with this person. And the only thing that I would add is that a career coach will help you, but a career coach will not do the work. Okay.
Yeah. And in this economy, what I have noticed, you know, periodically I will get a client who will say, you are supposed to help me find a job. And, you know, I don't understand why I don't have a job yet. And really the emphasis is on help.
I can't
find the job for you. I can give you the tools. I can give you hints. I can give you specific avenues to go down, but I can't make you walk down those avenues. So it's definitely a partnership. And I think it's important to realize that the coach, whoever they are, is not going to get you the job. You are going to get you the job.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think there was a question.
Cynthia, hi. Yes, my name is Orietta Ramirez, and first of all, thank you so much for offering us such a realistic view of our, I guess, both mental and physical processes that we're going through. But I had a question with respect to, I'm sort of a little different in that I was let go from Citigroup in December, and ironically enough, if you want to call it irony, is that people are more sympathetic because of the mere fact that everyone knew Citigroup laid off thousands and thousands of people, sort of along the lines of like GM and Chrysler.
Mm-hmm.
So, and although my relationship with my immediate boss wasn't the most optimal one, I have to say once I was like, oh, I received such an outpouring of support from colleagues as well as superiors from the firm. So I didn't experience so much the disappointment or the misunderstanding as to why I was let go. My problem now is I find myself, you know, 6 months now unemployed, where in the past every job that I went to usually was out of choice. This mm-hmm. is the first time, first of all, that I was, if you want to call it, let go or fired. And obviously the first time in my life to have been unemployed for such a long period of time, 6 months. So how do I find the balance between the sense of not so much the loss of work, but now wanting to find something and feeling so not incompetent, but not in control of finding something? And I understand the market is one thing, but mm-hmm. how does the psyche work? Do the processes still apply, the denial, the anger, would you say?
Some of it does, yes, I think. But it's more, it sounds to me anyway, like, and with many of my clients, it's the anger. It's anger about the market and anger, how come I didn't get that job that was available? There's got to be one job that I could have filled.
Right.
Because you said it yourself, you know, I can't believe I'm out of work for 6 months.
Right.
And yet, to many people, and probably some on this call, 6 months is a very short period of time in this market. So some of it is recognizing that the traditional time frames for finding a job have simply changed completely. The other thing, I think, is to try and think of different ways of looking for a job. And since you did have such an outpouring of support, I would think about contacting some of those people, saying, you know, I'm still in the market, and I wondered if you know of anyone that I might be able to spend 10 minutes with talking about, and then mention your area of specialty.
Okay.
I think you have to find a different way of looking for a job.
Right.
And that would be my first step for you.
Right. One of the things that I have found very hopeful is that I didn't really aggressively start searching for work until March. I figured I'd take advantage since I hadn't had the time to take, you know, 3 months, if you want to call it, vacation. I did, and enjoyed the winter time, you know, at home without having to shovel snow out so I can get to work. But between that, and then I think you mentioned this in part of your discussion, that the job market didn't really start to open up until this month.
That's correct.
So between March and the end of April, May, I really, in all honesty, was freaking out. In the last 2 weeks, I've started seeing, you know, the positions appear not only on the job boards, but, you know, there are people, colleagues, who've started calling and saying, I've heard of something. So part of me wanted to say, am I fooling myself into thinking that things are getting better, or are they really starting to get better? So I have to thank you for at least hearing you say something to that effect. Things are going to get better. You know, it's not going to be that you're never going to work again. So I take comfort in that at least. And gives me a little more motivation to get the ball rolling. So
yeah,
thank
you. I think
you.
In your case, you also want to, and this is the way I would position it in an interview, you have not been out of work for 6 months. You have been looking for a position for 2 to 3 months. because you purposely took time off.
Right.
So you have to keep that in mind as well. And really think about, what did I do with the initial period of time? If I was going through some of these stages, you know what? You don't count that as time actively looking for a job. When you go for an interview, you tell recruiters, I took some time off to regroup, to spend some time with my family, mm-hmm. and to decide about next steps.
Right.
It shortens, to the recruiter, it shortens the amount of time that you have been out of work, and it improves your candidacy in their eyes.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And you're quite welcome.
Henry, as well, for everything that you offer through PM Lessons Learned, it's awesome. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, I think, you know, part of finding the job is reaching out to find the job. I know where I work, they've hired 6 people in the last 9 months.
Oh.
You know, so there are companies out there that are hiring. It's just, you know, if you're looking at that black hole, I've had several calls that we've mentioned that really the job boards are dead. And one of the reasons why, you know, the job boards are dead is because, you know, some people have suggested that there's not real jobs out there. They're just kind of post to kind of get the numbers. You have to remember that job boards are a marketing tool. So everybody, every job that posts and every person that applies, that's a tool that they can sell to somebody else, to another company that they're trying to get to post or apply. You know
that's
what I'm
true.
Saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they spend millions and millions of dollars to advertise for the Super Bowl. You know, so they want to kind of get you to, you know, buy into what they have to offer. But for every job that's out there, there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people. So, you know, it's how you're going to market yourself, how you're going to really brand yourself, how you're going to be seen as a leader to go out and get what you want. You know, I'm looking at NJBiz.com. Right now I see an article here, wide-ranging New Jersey stimulus aimed to power state out of the recession. I'm sure if you read that article, there's probably opportunities there for some of you to, you know, find something that might be on the same level as where you were. You know, and it's, you know, you can go to the job boards. You know, you can continue doing that, or you can try to reach out, you know, beyond your comfort zone and see if you can reach out and find somebody that, you know, might be, you know, somebody that is hiring, that's looking for somebody with your skills.
Absolutely.
And also,
any more questions?
One of the things that I did, I'm sorry to interrupt, it's Toriette mm-hmm. again, is that although I do go to the job boards, although mm-hmm. one of the ones that I find very helpful is Indeed, but mm-hmm. for those positions where the company is actually advertised, what I end up going is to the company website, go to mm-hmm. their career site, and make sure the position is available, and mm-hmm. then apply through them versus the job board. And mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to get one interview, and I wouldn't say that's a great statistic, but nonetheless, when I did get the interview, it specifically was a result of that. So I, you know, you have to take it, I guess, to that next level, and obviously networking is going to be helpful, but I found that that gave me a better sense of confidence in that my resume was ending up at the right place. And what I would do in addition to not just, you know, uploading my resume for that position, was then I would try to get to the company website, get a phone number, and try to get to the HR office and just say, I submitted my resume, is there someone I can talk to, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I guess we do have a lot more legwork to do than we've had in the past, but, you know,
well,
I guess that helps.
For those of you who is familiar with New Jersey networking, you probably heard the name Rod Colon. He just, 4 days ago, he printed out a statistic done by the Sandler Institute. He says 1-5% of cold calls lead to successful sale. About 15% of referrals are successful when a name is given out. Okay? The success rate leaps to 50% when a phone call or email is sent on your behalf. and it catapults to 70% and over 80% when the person who can make this introduction attends the meeting or phone call. So I thought that, you know, I thought that was very, very powerful. And the job boards are great. Going to the website is great. The next thing is to find an advocate within that company that can really, you know, take you to the next step.
Right.
Hey, Cynthia and Scott, this is Rich Crowe.
Hi.
Rich.
How you doing? Great, great presentation, Cynthia.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say something to the group about the volunteering piece. I think, Scott, you touched on it.
Okay.
Recently, I volunteered for to be a volunteer coordinator, actually, for the PM Lessons Learned group. And I stepped up to do that basically to keep myself busy with similar skills that I did in my previous job, keep my mind busy, and take some of the pressures off the actual job search. And, I mean, I'm doing a lot of, phone calls to some of the members, getting re-engaged into speaking with more people. And that's again, it's helping me take some of the day-to-day pressure off the job search, you know, along with, you know, following Rod's direction on his methods. I am getting more direct phone calls, but just my advice to a lot of folks is volunteer to things that to some of the aspects that you've done in previous jobs. It'll keep you busy, keep your mind off, you know, the pressures of the job search, and it's been helping me. You know,
I think that's great.
Yep.
Great testimonial.
Yep.
We have any more questions? Come on. Don't be shy.
Hello?
Yep.
This is Linda again.
Hey, Linda.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I probably went through some denial of my own, but what I did at the beginning of my out-of-work journey was schooling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kept my
Excellent.
Mind busy and active.
Excellent. Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also keeps your skills very sharp.
And it gave my head time to adjust.
Right.
So that I could really get the attached to the reality of it a little at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an excellent point.
You know, there used to be a bigger stigma, I would say, to being unemployed. You know, especially with this economy, people are more familiar with that. You know, everybody has this, this self-worth about them. That they, you know, they want to kind of persevere and show everybody, but the same stigma is not there to people that are unemployed, you know. So when you meet somebody, you know, you got to figure out a way to get over and say, hey, hi, my name is Scott. You know, I'm a project manager. You know, I'm looking for a position in manufacturing, or hi, I'm Linda. I'm looking for a position in finance or financials, or I'm looking. Do you know anybody at this company? If you allow people to, you know, feel sorry for you, that's what they'll do. People want to help. They definitely want to help.
I believe that's true. Yes.
Yeah. There was a. I'm trying to get there now. We had a Charlene Wattler did our presentation in April, and you can find her presentation materials on the PM Job Shop group, and in that you'll find a ton of resources for niche websites for volunteering and, you know, for different types of finance and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I would encourage you, if you belong to a networking group, to take a look at their file section. You know, a lot of times people just belong to these groups and they really don't, you know, use the group for everything that, you know, they have there. There's diversity sites there. There's nonprofit sites there. It's an incredible amount of information. So, any other questions?
I'm good.
Okay. Well, with that, I have to, you know, very graciously thank Cynthia for this phone call.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It was my pleasure.
Oh, yes. And I mean, here we are, you know, an hour and a half later, and, you know, we're still on the phone call. So it's very, you know, it's encouraging. It's very encouraging to know that people are interested in what we have to offer and what you had to say, Cynthia. So with that, I appreciate it.
Oh, well, it was my pleasure, and thank you so much, and I wish you all the best of luck.
Okay. And if there's no more questions, I'd like to say good night.
Good night.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project Managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.